Eureka County versus Sadler Ranch, case number 75736. My understanding is that the state engineer is not going to be addressing the court today, that Karen Peterson from Allison McKenzie will be representing Eureka County, and that Paul Taggart will be representing Sadler Ranch. Each side has 30 minutes. Ms. Peterson, please advise the clerk how much time you wish to reserve for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, Karen Peterson from Allison McKenzie Law Firm representing Eureka County. And I would like to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal. And I would also like to note for the record that representatives of Eureka County are watching online, and so they are appearing in court and are with us today at the oral argument. So thank you. This appeal has to do with three principles, and Eureka County asks that the court rule in its favor on all three principles. The first principle is that district court judges cannot grant water right applications or grant water right permits instead of the state engineer, based upon the district court's de novo review of the record before the state engineer, based upon the district court's own factual determinations made based upon the record before the state engineer, based upon the district court weighing or reweighing the evidence that was before the state engineer, based upon the district court judging the credibility of the evidence that was before the state engineer, and the district court substituting its judgment for that of the state engineer. So that's principle number one. Principle number two is that water right applications in the state of Nevada did not be granted, and in this instance by the district court, for mitigation rights for unadjudicated vested claims with no determination made as to beneficial use, and beneficial use being the basis, the measure, and the limit to the right of the use of water in the state of Nevada. And the third principle related to this appeal is that Eureka County's appeal rights should not be taken away because the state engineer and Sadler Ranch entered into a settlement agreement where they agreed that they were not going to appeal the district court's determination in this case, and Eureka County's appeal is otherwise proper. I would also like to point out, based upon the supplemental authorities that were filed by Sadler Ranch on September 18th, Sadler Ranch filed the final notice of determination that was issued by the state engineer in the Diamond Valley adjudication. And I think the record needs to be clarified with regard to the quantity of the water rights that were awarded by the district court as mitigation rights, the 5,100 acre feet annually, and the quantity of the water rights that were awarded by the state engineer in the final order of determination. And while you may eyeball those two numbers and you may think that those numbers are close and those water rights granted mean the same thing, you need to be very careful by looking at the Notice of Supplemental Authorities Exhibit 1 that was provided by Sadler Ranch, which is the final order of determination by the state engineer. And if you look at page 436 and 437 of the final order of determination, you will see how the state engineer came to his quantity of water rights granted to Sadler Ranch based on manner of use, place of use, season of use, and application rate, meaning acre feet per acre granted to Sadler Ranch. And again, I have those pages pulled up. And if you look at the water rights that were granted, there were irrigation rights granted for 8 months of the year from April 2nd to November 30th in the quantity of about 3,900 acre feet. There were also stock water rights granted for 1 month, December 1st to December 31st, for about 431 acre feet. And then there were also other irrigation rights granted for the Romano Ranch, and that was irrigation from January 1st to April 1st in the quantity of about 687 acre feet. So as you can see, the district court just made a calculation of using the CFS, the flow rate for Big Shipley Springs of 7.02, and multiplied that by 365 days and got the 5,100 acre feet, which is totally different from the analysis that the state engineer used with regard to the vested claims of Sadler Ranch when it granted, again, if you're just eyeballing it, the numbers look the same, but the quantity of water rights and the application of the water rights that were granted in the final order of determination are very different. And so what we would...
So Ms. Peterson, as a junior water right holder, a junior appropriator, you're protesting the determination of the mitigation rights that Sadler sought, correct?
Yes.
And so now do we have a separate issue where the final order seems to calculate the same amount of acre feet but uses a different calculation than the one that's at issue in the order that's in front of us? I'm wondering if this argument and this case is premature. I don't know whether we are supposed to resolve the calculation that's set out in the final order or the calculation that's set out in the order that's been litigated up to this point, or the calculation that the district court made with respect to sending it back for remand. This is very unclear, and I don't know the terms of the settlement agreement and how that impacts this court's decision in one way or the other. These are very unanswered questions for me, so I don't know what we're doing here today or what we accomplished. Could you clarify that?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, with regard to the settlement agreement, the terms of the settlement agreement was attached to Sadler Ranch's motion to the reply in support of the motion to dismiss. And it specifically states that in paragraph 6, the limited scope of the agreement, and it indicates that it's not binding or controlling in any proceeding before the state engineer or any court reviewing his decisions, other than in the proceedings between the parties, which in that case was the state engineer and Sadler Ranch. In the case that's listed in the district court here, CV 1409-204. So it's Eureka County's position that this court is not bound by any settlement agreement that was entered into with the state engineer and Sadler Ranch, and obviously that doesn't include Eureka County that was a party, you know, to that proceeding below. Mm-hmm. And what Eureka County would urge the court to do so that we have some order in this proceeding because of the other things that have happened in the interim is that the court reverse the order of the district court and vacate that order and uphold ruling 6371 that was issued by the state engineer. And if the state engineer needs to update the quantity of the mitigation rights granted to Sadler Ranch now because of the final order of determination, you know, the state engineer can do that. But it's also Eureka County's position that the state engineer has not had an opportunity to quantify the impacts to that Sadler Ranch's own pumping has caused from its nearby wells on Big Shipley Spring. And so,
but excuse me, Ms. Peterson, isn't the only order before us the second order of the district court? You're asking us to reinstate a prior order, but the only order before us on appeal that we're looking at is the order, the last order by Judge Fairman.
Correct. And so we would ask the court to vacate and reverse that order and mm-hmm. affirm the state engineer's ruling 6371.
Which was the 2,900 acre feet?
Right, for 2,900 acre feet. That would be the proper procedure because the district court's, it's wrong, it's erroneous, based upon this the district court stepping outside the limited judicial review that it was required to do. So the matter should go back to the state engineer. If the state engineer now needs to update the quantity of the mitigation rights because of the final order of determination, like I said, the state engineer can go ahead and do that. But the state engineer also has to have an opportunity to quantify the impacts that Sadler's own pumping has had on its vested rights. And the state engineer hasn't had an opportunity to do that yet. And that's what's proper in this case, because Eureka County is very concerned and is adamant that mitigation rights should not be granted to a senior water right holder when the impacts to the senior rights are caused by groundwater pumping from that owns that senior water right holder. And the position of Stadler Ranch in this case and the position of the district court in this case opens the door for granting mitigation water rights without taking into consideration any self-inflicted harm by the senior water right holder or other natural conditions occurring, as the state engineer noted in the record in this case, and take those into consideration because those have had an impact or a portion of an impact on the senior's vested rights, and not just lay all the blame on the groundwater pumpers in Southern Diamond Valley, such as Eureka County, when the evidence doesn't show that that pumping by those Southern Nevada Diamond Valley groundwater users is the sole cause of any kind of impact to the senior vested rights. And so
procedural question. Even if we were to reinstate that prior order, what stops them from still agreeing to that settlement agreement? It's still between those two parties. Aren't we in the same position?
Well,
if they settle again and they agree to the terms that are in the settlement agreement?
I guess they could probably try to settle again, but I would want to settle with all the parties that are involved in the proceeding if I was going to settle with somebody. And maybe they need to come to Eureka County and talk to us about that, because the adjudication is going to take a long time. So these mitigation rights are never going to be finally quantified until the adjudication is done. And sadly,
so is there a final? Is there a final adjudication?
No, of Sadler's rights?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
In Diamond Valley, there is not yet. Those proceedings
that's the question that I have here, because your colleague across the aisle or the screen is arguing that the final adjudication, the mitigation rights are temporary, the final adjudication renders the mitigation right determination moot, and therefore we shouldn't even reach it. And I'm simplifying his argument. What's wrong with that position?
Well, even if the adjudication determines the vested rights of Sadler Ranch, it still needs the mitigation rights to get its water, because the spring is dried up. And so it needs the groundwater rights that are granted by the mitigation rights. It needs those groundwater rights so that it can get its vested claims, the water.
And the only way it gets to groundwater rights is through the mitigation right.
Correct.
Is that what you're saying? So because the spring's dried up, they have got to, it's not purely temporary on the mitigation rights. Those would be going forward in the amount of the original vested rights.
Correct. Unless there's other factors that have occurred after 1905 that would warrant the state engineer not granting the full amount of the vested claims as mitigation right. And again, that's Eureka County's position, is that there's self-imposed harm here. The Sadler Ranch owns the Brown Ranch now, and those wells are in closest proximity to Sadler Ranch's Big Shipley Spring. And the undisputed evidence, even from Sadler Ranch's expert in front of the state engineer, was that those rights are impacting Sadler's vested claims and the vested water rights, Old Shipley Spring, and that there are other artesian wells that are in the north end of the valley there, not related at all to the pumping in Southern Diamond Valley, that are also impacting the Sadler's vested rights. And the state engineer didn't get an opportunity to address that issue, because the first ruling, he used that modern hay production method, and the district court disallowed that. On remand, the state engineer was given strict instructions that he could only look at beneficial use of Sadler Ranch pre-1905. And that is why we argued at the status conference in front of the state engineer that they needed to look at self-imposed impacts. And the state engineer, for whatever reason, I assume because it thought it needed to follow the strict mandate of the remand instruction from the district court, didn't look at anything that happened.
Well, then let me interrupt you for a moment. If we were to grant your request to vacate the district court judge's ruling and reinstate the state engineer's prior ruling on remand for 2,900 acre feet, that still wouldn't get you the consideration you're urging, which is to what extent did they bring the loss of spring rights upon themselves by overusing groundwater? How would that get reopened on a straight remand on the district court's order?
So if you look at the briefs filed by Sadler Ranch and the state engineer, they both indicate in their briefs that the mitigation rights will be updated based on the adjudication proceedings. So it's anticipated that those mitigation rights, because now, I guess, if that's what Sadler's position is that its mitigation rights should be updated based on the final order of determination that's been issued by the state engineer so far in this proceeding. That will open up those applications being re-quantified. And again, the state engineer needs to have an opportunity to be able to consider what those self-imposed impacts are. Because again, it is fundamentally not fair for a senior water right holder to claim that its water rights have been impacted by groundwater pumping when the closest groundwater pumping is its own wells, and its own wells have impacted, undisputed on the record, have impacted the flows of Big Chipley Springs.
And what's the forum for that being litigated or challenged administratively or in court? Where do you go with that? How do you get that question teed up?
Well, if the state engineer's ruling is reaffirmed on remand, for a remand back to the district court, then obviously their ruling stands. But as I said, because now the adjudication has occurred, the state engineer and Sadler Ranch have, again, both acknowledged that the mitigation rights are going to be updated based upon that final order of determination. So that tees up the proceeding in front of the state engineer. And actually, I haven't looked at the permits, and I apologize, but the permits may even be conditioned on being updated based on the final order of determination that's been issued by the state engineer.
So I'm sorry, and maybe this is a matter of terminology, but there's a final order of determination, but that's not a final adjudication? I don't understand what the status is of these issues for final determination.
So there's a final order of determination that's been issued by the state engineer. That proceeding and that final order of determination has now gone to the district court, the 7th Judicial District Court, and it's Judge Fairman. And so the court then issues a judicial decree, and that's the final decree. It may come up to your court. But the court decree is the final decree. And as Sadler's noted in its answering brief, you know, that it contends the proceedings before the district court are de novo. And it also explains in its answering brief the complexities of the adjudication and the fact that it may take many years for the adjudication to be complete, especially if it has to wind its way through the district court and the, you know, the Supreme Court.
But the state engineer has finished its final process, and now it's up on appeal pursuant to the administrative appeal under the statutes. Is that right?
It's as far as the adjudication. So the other thing that is not clear and the district court confused is that the adjudication is very different from the mitigation right proceedings that are granted. You know, these mitigation rights were applied for before there were any adjudication of the water right claims.
When that goes to the district court for the final decree, isn't that going to trump anything that, even if we technically were to remand and reverse, and that order in the district court on this prior PJR, doesn't that final decree with everybody in the whole Diamond Valley's water rights, doesn't that trump this underlying petition for judicial review? How does it not?
Well, the adjudication obviously is the final say for Sadler Ranch's vested water rights. Totally. But this PJR that's pending before you has to do with mitigation water rights. And those are applied for under the procedure outlined by the state engineer in Order 1226. So we have two different things. And again, that's one of the arguments that we had with what the district court did. It conflated that the mitigation proceedings were the same as the adjudication proceedings. And they're not. They're not the same at all. They're totally different proceedings. So if I wanted to reserve my 10 minutes, I'm there right now. Is that how the clock works?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ms. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Am I coming through okay?
Yes, you are. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I apologize. I was on a different blue jeans this morning with district court, and I had accidentally dialed into that number. Fundamentally unfair was an interesting characterization of this situation. Sadler Ranch is the oldest ranch in Diamond Valley. Big Shipley Spring flowed more than almost any other spring in the state of Nevada, and it doesn't flow at all now. And it doesn't flow at all now because of groundwater pumping in Diamond Valley, because of the groundwater pumpers that Ms. Peterson is saying did not indicate that they were impacting Sadler Ranch. We had a hearing in 2013. They had an opportunity to put on self-inflicted harm evidence at that time. The state engineer reviewed that evidence when it was put on. I cross-examined their witness. He admitted that the primary cause of the decline of flow at Big Shipley Spring was the pumping in the southern part of the valley. We're past that now. We're 7 years past that. My client has a vested water right, which means it's a pre-1905 water right that can only be adjudicated by a court. The state engineer cannot make findings of fact when it comes to the adjudication of a pre-1905 water right. When the water law was first adopted in 1905, it was challenged because the state engineer had final decision-making authority over vested rights. Justice McCarran and Justice Talbot ruled that that was unconstitutional, that to take away the power of the courts in the determination of the possession of property was an unconstitutional provision in the original water law. That provision was stricken, and currently we have a process where the state engineer does a preliminary order determination, and then a final order of determination, and then he submits that to the district court in the form of a complaint. And the way that the code was drafted to remedy the unconstitutional infirmity was to have that final order of determination be a complaint, basically an allegation. That is what is now sitting in front of Judge Fairman, and Sadler Ranch's vested right is involved in that. And more importantly, the de novo nature of that proceeding was made clearer by the justices in that Ormsby County case. So Judge Fairman will have a complete ability to review the facts and the law that relate to Sadler Ranch's vested rights. And everything that we've done to date, the two orders by the state engineer, the two decisions by Judge Fairman, were all made subject to what would happen in that adjudication. We waived certain arguments. We elected to not challenge certain decisions, knowing that the adjudication would be the ultimate place where that was made, where that decision was made. And you might ask, well, why has it taken so long for Sadler Ranch's water rights to be adjudicated? In Nevada, here we are in 2020, and we still have many basins in the state that do not have their rights adjudicated. While I have a tremendous amount of respect for past state engineers and the state engineers' offices, they did not do their job in Diamond Valley. They did not listen to the warnings from the United States Geological Survey, who told them that they were overpumping, they were authorizing the overpumping of the valley. The state engineer gave out 130,000 acre feet of water rights in a valley that could only support 30,000 acre feet. and the pumping for five decades of that three times perennial yield led to an over 100-foot hole in the aquifer that sucks water from every direction in Diamond Valley right now to fill it. And it sucked water out of every spring that exists in that valley. And they're all dry now. And the state engineer knew that was going to happen, and he didn't do anything about it. Now then, he also didn't initiate an adjudication of the vested rights to find out who owned water rights on those springs. And in 1982, he finally did initiate an adjudication, but he didn't do anything with it until we filed a lawsuit to initiate an adjudication, a real adjudication, to fire up that 1982 adjudication. We had to file another lawsuit against the state engineer. We went to a settlement conference in front of this court, and we got the state engineer to agree to a set timeline for accomplishing the objectives of the adjudication. So we've been forced to live without an adjudication and live with this mitigation right process for 8 years now that we've been going through this litigation. Now, that adjudication looks at a pre-1905 beneficial use of water. And I want to clarify that Big Shipley Spring flows at 104 degrees in temperature, which means year-round there's water available from that spring. And before groundwater pumping began, there is evidence in the record that there was between 11 CFS and 15 CFS of flow. There's a USGS report at the appellant's appendix 414. There's another USGS report at respondent's appendix 51 and a UNR report at respondent's appendix 46 that all indicate that that's what the flow was before groundwater pumping began.
What number? Sorry, Mr. Taggart, what was the number that you just said was the pre-1905 flow?
Between 11 and 15 CFS.
Thank you.
And the state engineer threw out all of that pre-1960 flow rate evidence, largely in response to Ms. Peterson's arguments that there was self-inflicted harm. And he concluded that 7 CFS was the proper number to use for the spring. Again, we expect that in Judge Fairman's courthouse, we will argue and litigate what the true historic flow rate was at that spring. But just to put it into context, 7 CFS of flow. If your courtroom in Carson City there is 100 by 100 feet, 20 feet tall, that would fill that courtroom up three times a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And now that spring is totally dry. If you look at the aerial photographs that we had in the evidence, they show a stark, a shocking and alarming a picture of the valley in 1956 when the main feature was Big Shipley Spring, and the valley in 2012 when you see dinner pivots, one after the other, 12 wide. I mean, you could see them from the moon, all where the pumping is, and there's no water in Big Shipley Spring. And those aerial photographs are in the record at Respondent's Appendix, page 1900. So the ranch where this pre-1905 water occurred is 3,000 acres, 2,000 acres of which were irrigated. To put that into context, imagine Carson Tahoe Hospital in Carson City on the north end of town, and the distance from that to your courthouse in Carson City. That's 3.5 miles. That spring was, imagine that spring was at Carson Tahoe Hospital and you were irrigating all the way down at the Capitol with water from that spring. That's what this ranch was doing. And the only way that they could move water that far was to move the water around and irrigate throughout the year, which has been one of the main concerns here. The ranch was owned by Governor Sadler, who was the ninth governor of the state of Nevada, and he was the governor from 1896 to 1903, just prior to the adoption of the water law. And there's physical evidence, which was reams of physical evidence, was put before the state engineer and shown to Judge Fairman of a series of dikes and ditches and stack yards where hay was stacked 3 miles from the spring. Hay couldn't have been stacked 3 miles from the spring if it wasn't grown 3 miles from the spring, and aerial photographs. So all this evidence will again be reviewed de novo in the adjudication. And the state engineer sent the final order to the district court And Ms. Peterson's correct that the total is 5,034 acre feet for Sadler Ranch. I don't understand the argument about the numbers, you know, can eyeball the same. They're the same. That's the same quantity of water. Now, 533-230 is a statute related to the adjudication of waters in the state of Nevada. And what it says is that when a final order of determination is entered, the state engineer must divide the water, or he shall, I'm sorry, the division of water from the stream involved shall be made by the state engineer in accordance with the order of determination. That means that the state engineer has to comply with the order of determination now. He has no choice. Not only that, he entered a settlement agreement where he agreed in the settlement agreement that the primary provision, I think, which is more important than the one that was read to you already, is that the quantity of Sadler Ranch's mitigation right, as set forth in the amended order, Judge Fairman's order that you're reviewing, shall remain valid until such time as the final decree is issued. And imagine the situation of my client. They want a ranch. That's their purpose. They don't want to litigate. We were able to accomplish the ability to have them some water, and we can save the judicial resources until we get to the adjudication. Judge Fairman has held an initial status conference on that adjudication, and he intends to hold the hearings on those vested claims in the middle part to the fall of next year. And Judge Fairman has been very diligent about getting rulings out, 3 to 6 months after we have hearings in front of him. But
for present purposes, that adjudication is not final. It's called a final determination by the state engineer, but the final adjudication is, as opposed to determination, is pending before Judge Fairman, correct?
Absolutely, that's true. The final decree.
Yeah, so we don't have a final decree in Diamond Valley.
We do not. But we have a statute that requires the state engineer to comply with his final order of determination until the final decree is entered.
So is and I don't know enough, I may be misspeaking here, but is Sadler Ranch currently getting water pursuant to Judge Fairman's second order in this case or pursuant to the final determination by the state engineer?
Currently, there is a permit for water based on the amended order from Judge Fairman.
So this order in this case that's under appeal is the one under which, in the permit, Sadler Ranch is currently getting water?
That's correct.
So that order is still alive?
It is, but the state engineer agreed that regardless of the ruling here, because he agreed not to appeal this case, that he would abide by the amended order until the final decree is issued. They have two separate, in my view, controlling instruments. One is the settlement agreement. The other is the statute that describes the legal effect of the final order. One kicks in the 5,034 acre feet requirement. The other one kicks in the 5,100 acre foot requirement.
So is this argument moot based on the settlement agreement and based on the final determination?
We believe that this case is moot. We believe that regardless of Judge Fairman's ruling, the amount of water for Sadler Ranch is set, and so we believe that based on the settlement agreement that this case is moot.
But your settlement agreement was just between you and the state engineer, and the state engineer files a brief in this case supporting Eureka, even though they're nominally a respondent. It's not clear to me how you and the state engineer can settle adverse to a protestant, leaving aside the caption issues, with a settlement agreement that was worded as yours was. I mean, you two can agree not to argue among yourselves, but can you cut out another person that was party to that proceeding?
Well, it's our position they were not party to the proceeding, Your Honor.
I understand, but I asked you to leave that aside for a moment.
Okay. Well, I don't know that I can exactly, because Eureka County never filed an appeal, and beyond that, having implications to their party status. it has implications to their rights on appeal.
Right, but wait one second, Mr. Taggart. I understand all that, and let's talk about that in a minute. But let's assume for the sake of this discussion that Eureka County is a proper party and properly appealed. The settlement agreement just between you and the state engineer could not cut them out.
Well, if it couldn't, then I've been cut out many times, been on the outside looking in and very
similar
situations.
Then tell me how that works. How does that work?
It works like this, that a good faith settlement has to be approved by a court if there's joint and several liability. In this situation, we aren't in that context. We aren't covered by that sort of a requirement. So it's you know, Eureka County is not a party as far as we're concerned. I mean, I can't help but say that. And we're entitled to settle with the state engineer. If they don't like a settlement, they have the right to appeal his decision. And they could have appealed his decision to sign the settlement agreement was a decision that they feel aggrieved by. They had 30 days to appeal that decision if they wanted to challenge that settlement agreement. I've been in the same position in many cases. And that's the remedy. Not to require every party to agree before you can have a settlement. That wouldn't be good policy because we want to come up with ways that we can resolve cases like this.
So where do you get this? They had 3 days to appeal the settlement agreement.
Well, they have 30 days. I'm sorry. They have 30 days to appeal any decision of the state engineer, just like a ruling 533-450 allows that. So they were authorized to file an appeal of his decision to sign the settlement agreement.
But they took the position that they didn't even know about the settlement agreement until you filed a motion to dismiss this appeal challenging their party status, correct?
Correct. And they can file an appeal 30 days from when they become aware of the rendering of a decision. The statute says that you have 30 days from the rendering of a decision. My view is that means that it has to be communicated to all the parties. So they could certainly have argued that they had the right to challenge that settlement agreement in that regard. I also don't think that Judge Fairman reweighed the evidence.
Wait, before you get to that, what statute is that, the 30 days from the decision of the state engineer that you're talking about as far as the settlement agreement?
Yes. NRS 533-450.
Thank you.
So we also take the position that Judge Fairman did not reweigh the evidence. Essentially what happened here is Judge Fairman said it's arbitrary and capricious the way the state engineer interpreted the evidence. Judge Fairman said that the state engineer cherry-picked certain pieces of evidence that did not, when read in context, say anything like what the state engineer was using them to say. And they led the state engineer to a completely unreasonable decision. So the substantial evidence standard is not a blindfold. Not force a court to not review evidence. It requires a court to review the evidence that was relied upon and determine whether a reasonable person would come to the same conclusion as the state engineer. And a court needs to look at all the evidence that's submitted to the administrative agency or the state engineer, look at it and understand from it all, does the state engineer's decision make sense? And here Judge Fairman said it does not clearly make sense. And the fundamental point is, the state engineer said Sadler Ranch didn't use any water in the winter prior to 1905.
Didn't it allocate 700 acre feet to the winter use?
He did. And this was part of the fiction that Judge Fairman saw in the state engineer's reasoning. There was one parcel of ground within the Sadler Ranch. And again, with my analogy of the hospital all the way down to the Capitol grounds, imagine there was a parcel at the state capitol that got winter water because it had a water rights certificate. That's what happened at Sadler Ranch. There was a thing called Eccles Field in 1917. It received an actual state certificate of water by a state engineer for winter water. The state engineer could not ignore that. But what he essentially said is that was the only piece of ground in that entire ranch, that entire 3.5 miles by 1.5 miles, that was the only piece of ground that got winter water, and all the rest of the ranch didn't get winter water. You also have to assume that, you know, a guy who was smart enough to become governor couldn't figure out how to use half the water that came out of the spring. that he let 50% of the spring flow go to waste. And Judge Fairman thought that was ludicrous when you looked at the evidence that the state engineer relied upon. He also looked at the prior findings the state engineer had made before Judge Fairman remanded to the state engineer the first time. He said, the state engineer said, that Sadler Ranch used all the water year round. And then when it came back, the state engineer had changed his mind. Now they say, oh, well, the state engineer is not bound by stare decisis. This isn't stare decisis. This is arbitrary and capricious. You can't just change your mind without any basis. And that's what the state engineer did. He also effectively awarded a duty for the lands on Sadler Ranch that didn't make any sense either. Less than a mile away from the south end of the ranch is the Bailey Ranch. And the Bailey Ranch got a mitigation right back in the 90s. And it has a duty of water that it receives per acre. And the duty that Sadler Ranch got was half of that. And Judge Fairman told the state engineer the first time when he remanded it, he said, look at the Bailey certificate. Look at the mitigation right you gave to Bailey. I think that's a good model to use. And the state engineer ignored it. And he came up with this irrigation season only methodology. Now, so those are the types of reasons why Judge Fairman correctly found that the state engineer's decision was arbitrary and capricious. The state engineer didn't use the traditional method that we've all learned is used, where you take acres and you multiply them by a duty, and that's what the total amount of a water right is. Instead, he decided to base it on flows. That was new. And I guess the easiest way to think that Judge Fairman was right is that the state engineer agrees with him now. The state engineer went out and did a field investigation. He hadn't done one before the two decisions he gave to Judge Fairman. There, after the field investigation, his staff went out and saw all these physical structures that were used to move water around on the property year-round. And now the state engineer is agreeing with Judge Fairman on the quantity of water that should occur at the ranch. So we don't think he reweighed the evidence. We think he found that the evidence was simply there was no way, it was arbitrary and capricious to interpret the evidence the way the state engineer did.
Mr. Taggart, is it fair to say that the, and I see on page 24, Judge Fairman says the state engineer's inconsistency in this case are disturbing, that the facts don't support the conclusion?
Yes.
Or is he, okay.
Well, once you strip away those fundamental facts that the state engineer relied upon, then he has no substantial evidence to support his decision. And then what Judge Fairman did is he fell back on the remaining facts in the record that had been found by the state engineer. That's all he did. He said, I can't believe these findings because they make no sense. And then he fell back on the findings the state engineer had made, used those to come up with the amount of water. And I guess then the question is, what should he have done? There's this saying, once bitten, twice shy. What about twice bitten, twice shy? How many times does a district court have to send something back to administrative agency and the administrative agency doesn't do what the judge asks them to do before the judge has to say, you know what? This isn't that complicated. I'm going to use your facts and tell you what the conclusion is. I'm going to add A plus B plus C. I'm going to tell you that equals D because there's no dispute that that's what it equals. And I'm not going to give you the chance to drag this water right holder who's lost their water rights based on your activities. I'm not going to force them to go drag through another administrative hearing and have to battle through the gauntlet against this attack from the junior groundwater pumpers whenever you try to go get your mitigation water. So we've cited to a case, McDonnell Douglas v. NASA, which talks about the endless do loop that can occur when courts have to send cases back and forth to a district court. We think that case stands for the proposition that at some point remand is futile. We think that your decision in General Molly, or it's called Eureka County versus State Engineer, it involved the Kobe Valley water rights. In that case, our sides were a little bit different. And I was arguing Judge Fairman could not take an action on a water right, that it had to be remanded to the state engineer to do that. You ruled that he could. You ruled that Judge Fairman could deny the water right applications without further remand to the state engineer in that case.
What's that case again?
It is Eureka County versus State Engineer, and it involves the Kobe Valley Ranch, CVR, and it's cited too in our brief. And the last point on that is where you're dealing with an adjudication, and Judge Fairman mentioned this. He's thinking to himself, this is my case. I want this case because I'm the judge who gets to determine how much water to be awarded. And I'm trying to get that, but I can't force the state engineer to do his adjudication any faster. There are some powers that that judge has in the adjudication, and Judge Fairman felt that the equitable powers he has inherent as a judge and his powers in the adjudication to do the fact-finding on a water right like this, they mean something too. Now, so for all those reasons, we think it was proper for him to award the water and cut off endless amounts of litigation and so forth. We also think that Judge Fairman's decision can be upheld because it was a conclusion of law. Judge Fairman looked at the evidence and the state engineer's conclusions about what constitutes beneficial use. So beneficial use is a key term in the water law. We call it the measure, the basis, and the limit of the water right. And the state engineer made decisions that certain types of water use, evidence of certain types of water use, did not constitute beneficial use. Judge Fairman disagreed with him. That's a legal question. No de novo review. I mean, no deference to the state engineer. That's de novo. And like, for instance, Sadler Ranch could not irrigate all those lands at one time. They had to move the water around from field to field. The testimony of the experts and the historic testimony or historic evidence is that water was put onto different parts of the ranch in the fall, like right about now time of year, to provide what we call pre-irrigation water. Common practice in Nevada, it just feels wet before the snow flies, and then when the spring comes, you don't have bone dry soil. You've got some soil that you can work with right away. So you pre-irrigate. That's a beneficial use of water. Sadler Ranch was able to move that 101 degree water in the middle of the winter out to these fields and put flood irrigate those fields in the winter and have that water be available in the spring for that first for the first growing.
Also, what do you say to the Blaine case out of Idaho, 1930? That says that is not a beneficial use of the water. Are you familiar with that decision?
I am. I read it in my colleague's brief. That's just not the law in Nevada. We have winter water use for irrigation. What I just described. But I guess the clearest way to combat that case is that there was a winter water right granted at Eccles Field between January and March of every year. It's a certificate in the state engineer's office. That's clearly a beneficial use of water. And all we're talking about is recognizing that that didn't just happen on that one block of land on the ranch. So I have some points to raise about the scope of this appeal. Our view is that the self-inflicted harm, I mean, it's blame the victim when the junior groundwater right pumpers are the ones that dried up the basin, and their own expert admitted to that on the stand and cross-examination, to now come back and try to blame the victims for why their water's gone, we think is not only inappropriate, but it's been waived. Those arguments were made before the state engineer in the first hearing. The state engineer addressed those arguments in his first ruling, 6290. Eureka County did not appeal that decision. That means they are barred from arguing self-inflicted harm now and forever. They had the right to make that argument. They did make that argument, and it was ruled upon finally. They had an opportunity to appeal. They did not, and that decision and that issue is done. When we went back down again after Judge Fairman's first remand, Eureka County tried to bring it in again. We raised the waiver argument, and the state engineer agreed and would not consider the self-inflicted harm evidence. Another couple issues I want to point out that are outside the scope of this appeal are that we did not appeal where we felt the state engineer had improperly made factual findings, because we believe we'll do that at the adjudication stage. So we think the spring flowed more than 7 CFS. We think there's evidence of that, and we're not bound by the 7 CFS. We had Judge Fairman clarify that in his order. And also there was a decision about, from the state engineer about Indian Camp Spring the second time around. We didn't waive our rights on that either. Again, and also I hope I didn't hear that we're going to start arguing about whether the state engineer has the authority to grant a mitigation right or not. That issue also was raised. Shockingly, the spring's dry, the oldest water right holder in the valley's dry, and the argument from the junior groundwater pumpers was there's no right for the state engineer to do anything about it. So the state engineer did it. He allowed it to happen. But the argument was he didn't have any basis in law to do anything about it. Well, he thought he did. And the simplest answer is our water right is a change application. It's simply changing the point of diversion from the spring that's now dry to intercept that water, to induce that flow from a groundwater well that used to come up at the spring. And since it doesn't come up at the spring now, we have the right to go capture it in a well. That's just a change application. There's no additional authority needed from the state engineer to do that. And to the extent there are claims that he doesn't have the authority to issue a mitigation right, that also was waived, because when he said he did in ruling 6290, that was not appealed. And so that is also barred by judicial estoppel. Thank you for your time. And if you have any other questions.
Does anyone in Carson City have any further questions for Mr. Taggart? Las Vegas? Thank you very much. Ms. Peterson, you have 9 minutes and 52 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I would direct your attention to paragraph 4 of the settlement agreement, which indicates that the parties acknowledged, meaning the state engineer and Sadler, the parties acknowledged that Eureka County had already filed their appeal in this case. And that nothing in this section shall prevent either party from participating as parties in this appeal. So Eureka, at the time the settlement agreement was executed by the parties, Eureka County had already filed this appeal. And the state engineer and Sadler anticipated as participating in parties to this appeal. So the settlement
is the state engineer's decision to enter that settlement agreement a separate decision that supersedes what happened here, and can that be, or should it be, separately appealed?
No, Your Honor. I have never heard of an instance where a settlement agreement constitutes a binding final decision by an administrative agency that's subject to judicial review. And you have cases specifically, and I'm sorry, I can't cite them right off the top of my head right now, but you have cases specific to the state engineer where you have determined what's a final appealable determination and what's not a final appealable determination. And I would say the state engineer entering into an agreement with another party is not a final appealable determination under your case law, as you set forth in the state of Nevada. And the other argument that is inconsistent, and I don't understand where Sadler Ranch is coming from, is with regard to paragraph 5, which discusses that the quantity of the mitigation right, according to the agreement of the parties, is going to be valid until such time as a final decree is issued. Again, that's the court decree in the matter of the determination. Yet Mr. Taggart has been arguing in this proceeding that no, we have to, the quantity based on the final order of determination has to be recognized now pursuant to NRS 533.230. Yet that's not, again, what the parties agreed to in their agreement. And again, if you look at paragraph 6, I think that they were anticipating that their agreement's not going to have any precedence on the appeal. They know there's appeal by Eureka County. They know Eureka County is not a party to the settlement agreement. And they agree of the limited scope of their agreement, and it doesn't apply to any court reviewing the state engineer's decision. It only applies to that district court proceeding. Let me ask one more time.
Even if this court was to reverse and remand and that other order stands, what's to stop the state engineer and Sadler Ranch from entering into the same settlement agreement that they're entered into right now, which apparently reflects, at least per Mr. Taggart, pretty much the same water as the determination order. What's to stop that? And you're in the same position as you are right now.
Well, Your Honor, they can enter into, I guess, any agreement they want to, but I would assume at least the state engineer would be maybe interested in what Eureka County might think. And also,
would there
Sadler
be a right
might?
To protest something like that?
No, there is not a right to protest a settlement agreement. And according to Mr. Taggart, I'm going to have to, if Eureka County disagrees with a settlement agreement that they don't even know anything about, they need to file another petition for judicial review, which seems to defeat the purpose of entering into a settlement agreement if you're trying to avoid litigation. So the argument doesn't make sense, and you're on dangerous ground if you're disallowing a protestant to appeal because other parties to the proceeding have stipulated and agreed to settle their differences between them. It's just not fair. It's not fair. And Eureka County was a party. I think the court already knows that they already determined in case 77512, which was the Renarachi appeal of their mitigation water rights, and the state engineer conducted the Renarachi mitigation applications and the Sadler mitigation applications in the same proceeding, issued one ruling, the first ruling on both of those water right applications. And the proceedings in front of the district court were consolidated, the petition for judicial review by Renarachi and the petition for judicial review by Sadler. And so this court has already determined in the appeal filed by Renarachi, because Mr. Taggart's office made the same arguments that Eureka County was not a party.
We did allow you to proceed with the appeal.
Become a party to the appeal.
But right. I want to go back to what you answered Justice Silver's question. If this case were, like, let's say we reverse and remand and we say, district court, no substantial evidence, there was substantial evidence to support what the state engineer does, so we're going to reinstate the second of the two state engineer rulings, which gives Sadler roughly 2,900 AFA. If we did that, is it your position that the state engineer and Sadler could settle on the same exact terms that they've already settled in without you being party to it and excluding you from it, and you would have no right to protest or appeal that settlement?
Well, there wouldn't be a case that they were settling if they entered into that agreement. If you affirm the state engineer's ruling, 6371 or whatever the number of that ruling is, that would be valid. If the state engineer was going to modify those permits, I mean, I would assume that he would have to have a proceeding to do that, and Eureka County would be a part of that because they
Well, Sadler could technically appeal that, right?
They could.
And then enter into a settlement whereby they don't appeal it, and they do exactly what they're doing right now.
They could, and as a party to the proceeding, it doesn't seem fair. I mean, if the state engineer wants to go through it the proper way and go through and quantify that mitigation right based upon its final order of determination and taking into consideration, like we said, the self-imposed harm, I mean, then that might be a valid basis to grant mitigation rights in this case. But just to agree that what the district court did was proper, because, again, eyeballing the numbers, they seem to be similar. I mean, that's not the right way to go about granting water rights in the state of Nevada. So I guess maybe we would have a problem with the state engineer's office if they did something like that.
I guess I have a question, and perhaps it's better for the state engineer, but they entered into a settlement agreement with Mr. Taggart's client, Sadler. Yet, after the settlement agreement, when the state engineer files its brief, it is supporting Eureka County on some of the procedural issues. Do you have any comment to offer on that and how it bears on whether that settlement agreement mooted your case as Mr. Taggart argues.
No, I don't think so, Your Honor, because the settlement agreement specifically states that they are going to participate in parties in Eureka County's appeal. And obviously, the state engineer felt that they could take whatever position they wanted in this case. So I think, again, I don't know how much this settlement agreement is really worth, because it seems to apply to only one case. One of the parties can't even agree that the terms, when it says it's going to, the quantity is going to apply until the decree is entered. One of the parties doesn't even agree that that's what should happen in this case, that now the state engineer has to follow NRS 533.230. And the parties understood when they were entering into this that it wasn't going to be any kind of, you know, precedent or set any kind of precedent or be controlling on the reviewing court. So I think it was appropriate what the state engineer did in their brief, and the state engineer was correct. The district court didn't perform a limited judicial review. The district court substituted its views on the evidence and its judgment for that of the state engineer, and that should not stand. You should not want that district court order to stand, and you shouldn't want district court judges to be granting water right applications.
Don't we want parties that were involved, as these two parties were? Don't we encourage settlement?
Of course.
I mean, here they've settled the case.
Of course we want settlements. But I think, wouldn't it be better if all the parties to a case settled? I mean, that's what we really want for finality with regard to settlements. So, Eureka County's appeal rights shouldn't be thwarted because of the settlement agreement reached by the state engineer and Sava Ranch. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do any of my colleagues in Carson City have any questions of Ms. Peterson? Or we also have the state engineer available, who has not spoken but offered to answer questions if there were any.
Just one.
Justice Silver. And is your question for Ms. Peterson?
Yeah. It's true, though, you never moved to intervene as a party into that district court action, right? You never chose to intervene into that action so that you could be part of a good faith settlement if a settlement occurred.
Your Honor, we did not move to intervene in that proceeding, but I would disagree that we weren't entitled to be a participant in a good faith settlement. And again, I would point you to your order that you already issued in 77512, where you did indicate that Eureka County was a party to those proceedings.
Chief?
Justice Kadish.
Yeah, sorry, it's actually for Mr. Taggart, so sorry to go back, but is it your view that the state engineer breached the settlement agreement by filing a brief after the settlement agreement supporting the Eureka County's challenge?
Your Honor, I want to be delicate because I appreciate that the state engineer's counsel has not participated in this argument, and I think that is an indication of good faith. We were concerned about the covenant of good faith and fair dealing and compliance with the agreement, but if I may, I will rest on what we stated in our briefs any further on that point.
Got it. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Is there anything further in Carson City or Las Vegas? I want to thank all counsel for this appeal. It's challenging, and I really appreciate handling such a long argument virtually, and for your briefs and oral arguments. The matter will stand submitted and will be in recess until the further call of the court.